Here we go again.
It's time to talk.
I thought it was April Fool's Day when I heard that one. Get me off the air before I have a heart attack. We will have nothing to see for it. There's been many false dawns.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
The kindness of Cork people who never let you down.
Conversation that matters.
So, be part of the conversations that matter. The Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. You can text 0868 104 106. It's Friday, which means it's a free food Friday, courtesy of ourselves and Camille Thai. So up to 15 of you will be fed with the most delicious food this lunchtime from Camille Thai. It's your opportunity now to text who you are and where you are to 0868 104 106. So text 0868 104 106. We'll start the shout-outs in 45 minutes' time. Free food Friday, 15 of you fed. So we want to know who you are and where you are to 0868 104 106. Paper-wise this morning, sadly, more deaths on our road. The 8th Cork road death in 2024 and the 2nd on the N25 in only a matter of days. What are we going to do about it? It's awfully, awfully sad. This is the death of a very young man in his 20s, a collision between a car. Remember that was the one we were talking about yesterday morning, the issue down east with the traffic delays because of a bad accident. That was resulted in the death of a man in his 20s. Collision between a car and an articulated lorry near Middleton early yesterday morning. The second fatality on the road in 4 days. 8 now, the number of deaths on Cork roads this year. 7:30 in the morning. It's tragically sad. And talking of tragedies, the death of the GAA broadcaster Paddy Palmer at Inishannon is the subject of an ongoing court case. There is a Ukrainian national who denies dangerous driving causing the death of Paddy Palmer at Christmas 2022. He claimed in court through his lawyers yesterday that he drove through the crossroads as safely as he could. I have court reports on this from Olivia Kelleher, and I'll chat with her about the latest day's evidence a little later on this morning. But of course, the death of O.J. Simpson dominates much of the papers all over the world and totally dominates the tabloids front pages here in Ireland, with the Sun's front page saying, long-time double murder accuser, Caitlyn Jenner says, good riddance. The disgraced O.J. Simpson has died at the age of 76, the reality star blasting, good riddance. He, of course, was just such big news back in the 90s. You might remember the white Bronco speeding with loads of cop cars behind them and O.J. Simpson inside fleeing arrest. Photographs and all making the papers today, and few tributes to O.J., although they are there. He died of cancer, incidentally, at the age of 76. But if you do the inside pages of the Red Tops there, you'll see that there were few tributes, many still believing that he got away with the murder of his ex-wife, Nicole, and her friend, Ronald Goldman, in 1994. You might remember the court case. And who will forget the fleeing Bronco, as I said, being driven by a pal of his and him in the passenger seat, choppers and everything in the air following them. But he had a defense lawyer, Johnny Cochran, and one of the more bizarre parts of the trial in which he was actually acquitted of the two murders was the glove, the blood-stained glove. And if it don't fit, you must acquit. That was what was being said in court. They were trying to get O.J. Simpson to put on the murder glove, and it was found that it didn't fit his hand. Now, he, subsequent to all of that, sometime later, was found guilty in a civil case brought by the families of Nicole and indeed Goldman. And they were awarded millions in damages, but much of it, possibly nearly all of it, if not all of it, was never paid by O.J. Simpson. And then subsequent to that, he did go to jail in 2007, charged with armed robbery and kidnapping in Las Vegas. He got a 33-year-old jail sentence for that and just served 9. But it's all over the papers today. I'm just giving you the little bit of the detail regarding his life. Obviously, he was a very, very famous NFL footballer and did a lot of kind of slapstick movies as well. But back here on Lee's side, the Debenhams workers, or at least the former Debenhams workers, will get 4 weeks' pay for each year of service. They went all the way to the Labour Court, which awarded them 4 weeks' pay, and they hope now that this will mark the end of this four-year ordeal for them, not just them, but indeed hundreds of others around the country as well, when Debenhams decided to call it a day. 800 workers in total with three of them from Cork. Now, they got to go through the receivers and the liquidators to get the money, but hopefully, fingers crossed, this will be the end of it. 4 weeks, it's not great. It could have been worse, but God knows it could have been a hell of a lot better. And also in the Echo, and this is something that we've been dealing with of late, this is the amount of begging inside in town. And we were talking about different types of begging, professional begging, those that really are genuine and those that are not. And then the amount of Romanian begging that's going on in the Roma Gypsy begging that's going on in the city centre. So one makes the case, makes the court stay. And I'm not saying anything about the man. I'm not saying that it's organised or part of a group or anything like that, but this is an individual who's a Romanian national. He was convicted of begging on the streets in Ireland 12 times. And yesterday he got a suspended jail sentence on the undertaking that he leave the country. Now, his solicitor said he has taken the appropriate steps to arrange his flight. He will return to Romania and will not come back to Ireland. His family are there, actually, back in Romania. He's got a wife and five children, and that his intention is to go back to them. He was charged and, got the jail term, which was suspended, obviously, on the basis that he leaves Ireland because he was obstructing pedestrians in Cork city centre by engaging in begging. 45-year-old man with 10 previous convictions for begging on the streets. And then, I know we often talk about, transport and travel. Sometimes it's the airport. The last couple of days, I've been seeing a lot of people talking about, the issues regarding Irish Rail and Kent Station and parking and things like that. But interestingly, in the Echo, there are some Irish Rail complaints published that have been released. One has to do in particular with a train journey where the boiler of an engine loco broke down, and it resulted then in, I think, all of the grid or a lot of the rail tracks having to just having to stop. And there was one particular fury of passengers who were left 7 hours literally sitting there, sometimes on the train, sometimes on the track for like 2.5 hours in the middle of the night. Some people didn't get home until 4 o'clock in the morning. So there was a lot of emails then from people who were left stranded in the pouring rain on the platform waiting for another train to come along because of the failure. And then, of course, those that were on the train themselves were very, very critical. They said one passenger said they had no food or drink for 7 hours because of the major delays. Irish Rail staff did their best, but after being stuck on a train for 2.5 hours on the track with no refreshments being offered, no toilets working, and the toilets overflowing, the smell was atrocious. The heating on the train was turned up so you couldn't even breathe. One elderly man actually didn't get home till 4 o'clock in the morning. So while Irish Rail do a lot of things right, unfortunately, from time to time, it also goes wrong on them. And in this case, of course, it was the type of planning that they put into something when a loco breaks down. Helen McEntee makes the papers today. She says she's going to take another look and see if she can address some of the concerns about the woke hate speech legislation, as the Sun calls it today. And the tarnish to Micheál Martin's in the doghouse because he had to try and defend yesterday in the Dáil the €1 million a month that's being spent on Ukrainian refugees' pets. It's not a year, lads. It's a month. It's an insane amount of money. There's 1,800 dogs, cats, other animals, I suppose birds and hamsters and all sorts of things being looked after by state funds, which is taxpayers' money. And I just can't understand how it could be anywhere like €1 million a month. But there it is, tarnished in the doghouse over million a month bill for refugees' pets. It's just farcical. It's not even laughable. It's farcical. There's a story in the English Times then, talking about money. This woman is a multi-millionaire. She's got millions and millions of pounds. She's a landlady, so therefore she makes an awful lot in rent. But anyway, can't argue the toss. The woman's a multimillionaire. And she's been convicted in a British court of slavery. She kept a slave for 16 years. She mightn't have thought she was keeping a slave, but she was convicted of enslaving a woman for 16 years. Now, she's been jailed for 6 years and 8 months. That happened in 2022. But now, the latest update to the story is that she has been forced to sell a property to pay the person, the woman that she enslaved for 16 years, £200,000. I would have thought it would have been an awful lot higher than that. £200,000 for 16 years of slavery sounds very low to me when you break it down year by year, but there you have it nonetheless. And then, if you are ever in court, lads, then one way of winning your case is getting a beautiful looking lawyer or solicitor or barrister, because if you want to win your case, get a beautiful barrister. It seems there's research out now saying, at least analysis, saying that lawyers perceived to be more attractive enjoyed consistently higher success rates and were more likely to win cases outright. So I don't know if it's okay anymore to say don't get an ugly lawyer, but it probably isn't okay to say that or even use the word ugly anymore in the times we live in. But the story in the Mail this morning says go get yourself a beautiful barrister. Go get yourself a Calista Flockhart, apparently, from Ally McBeal, as opposed to don't get yourself Leo McKern from Rumpole of the Bailey kind of thing. They do better, the good-looking ones, when they're arguing with the judges, apparently. And then it's hard to know, really, whether holiday prices are gone up by 40%. Some people are saying that holidaymakers are being warned about the soaring costs of package deals across the summer, but the experts and those that are selling the holidays are saying, that's not true. It's just the case that more people now are upgrading to better holidays. And if you ever wondered, I was talking earlier in the week about why we don't grow so much fruit and vegetables anymore in Ireland. As the story in the Mirror says, that one of the main reasons for that is that people can't grow it because the fields are constantly waterlogged by constant rain. But if you ever wonder, you know, what people are buying in the deli or what bit of food they're getting at lunchtime, well, the most popular is the chicken fillet roll. And myself and Claire this morning spent a good 2 or 3 minutes discussing the merits of the chicken fillet roll and exactly what goes into them. But apparently it is far and away the most popular deli food. It's way ahead of things like the chicken and stuffing sandwich, the BLT, the chicken Caesar wrap. It's way ahead as well of, say, for instance, the sausage roll, which is quite popular. 2 or 3 sausage rolls in a bag are those that go for the jambon. I must taste one of those someday, a jambon. But if you didn't know what went into the most popular chicken fillet roll, it is a combination of chicken, or crispy bread roll to begin with, spicy chicken, lettuce, cheese and coleslaw. And apparently that's a winner all the time. Of course, the chicken has to be warm, doesn't it? I don't go for that, actually. If I'm ever going for a roll, I go for the spicy roll, and I go for the breaded chicken, for sure I will. But I'll only put into it potato salad and grated cheese. Oh, loads of black pepper and salt. I just love that one. And then there's a lot happening with regards to the movies and stuff. Oh, actually, somebody who did very well with books that turned into movies, J.K. Rowling, makes the Irish Mail today. Just a paragraph on this and I'll move on. J.K. Rowling has said that she will not forgive the Harry Potter stars Daniel Radcliffe and Emma Watson because of their pro-stance criticism of her. And she said if they ever got in touch to apologise, she would not accept their apology. And Kin, which I think is one of the best television series that I've seen in many years. There's been 2 series of it. There's going to be a third. Netflix have picked Kin up and they're going to broadcast the 2 series, and it'll go global on Netflix, which means that also with the deep pockets that Netflix probably have, they, in association with RT, I suppose, will make a third season. I think that's great, great news. Also, for those of you that are Downton fans, that makes the papers as well, because you're going to get a third Downton movie. But it most definitely will be the last. Shooting begins next month. Text 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Can I just mention, because I'm looking for your help on this, I saw a story on the Mirror this morning where a bride lied to the venue that she booked about why she was booking it. It was actually a wedding reception she was having, but she booked it as a party, and on that basis paid an awful lot less than she would have done had it been a wedding. Right? She came a cropper. This is in the UK, where the average wedding, they say, costs £20,000 as of 2023. So anyway, she came a cropper because after the event, and it went really well, and I guess she got a much cheaper gig because it wasn't known by the venue that it was actually a wedding, thought it was a party. But she then went online and posted photographs and everything of her wedding. Of course, the hotel saw it and they got very angry about it and got in touch with her. They were very snarky about it, actually, saying, you know, you should have told us this. It wasn't right. It would have been completely handled differently. Snarky emails back and forth saying this was an unapproved event on the property and a violation of our policies. But it got me thinking then as to how much, say, a wedding would cost, even if you just get down to the nitty-gritty of how much a plate would cost per guest. Because the minute you mention weddings, I think, with anything, I know I spoke about this a few months ago, but the minute you mention a wedding with anything, it could be, no disrespect now, but it could be hair and makeup, it could be the band, it could be the photographer, the videographer, things like that. The costs go up automatically when it's a wedding. They just do. Things get more expensive. And then I was chatting this morning, because I know of a pal who up the country is getting married, and they struggled to find it cheaper than €130 a plate, and that was cheap. There were dearer offers than that. I don't know what that entails. Probably starter, main course, dessert, teas, coffees. Would it include an amount of wine per guest? But anyway, I'm just wondering, how much is the cost per plate now for a typical wedding? Is it around €130? Is it dearer? How much did you pay? How much are you paying? What kind of prices are you guys seeing? Text 0868104106, and I'll come back to that later on this morning. I'd love some examples of it. You can also give me a WhatsApp message if you can't text or call, so you can WhatsApp also. WhatsApp message me on 0868104106. But to very serious matters, because before the courts, a Ukrainian national who denies dangerous driving causing the death of the GAA broadcaster Paddy Palmer at Inishannon at Christmas time in 2022 claimed through his lawyer that he drove through the crossroads as safely as he could. That's some copy from The Echo this morning. It happens to be Liam Heelan's copy, but also covering it is the freelance journalist Olivia Kelleher, and she joins me. She joins me by phone. So just a little bit of housekeeping first. Olivia, good morning. So you can tell us then what's been happening the last couple of days. That's fine.
The last couple of days, Neil, I suppose Paddy Palmer would be very familiar to an awful lot of people. He was a GAA commentator with 96FM and C103, and he wrote a column for The Echo. This accident we heard occurred very close to his home in Inishannon. There is a man from Ukraine called Bogdan Bizverhi, he had an address in Rigsdale in Ballinahassig, County Cork, and he's denying a charge of dangerous driving causing the death of Paddy Palmer at a place called Duncareen Cross in Inishannon, County Cork, on December 29th, 2022. Now, we got an outline of the case from prosecution barrister Brendan Kelly on Wednesday, and he said that it'll be the evidence of the state that basically on the morning of the crash, that the accused went into a petrol station in Crossbarry where he appeared to have a flat tyre, and he stayed in the petrol station for several hours. He changed the tyre and he left between 9 and 10 o'clock, and he went to Duncareen Cross, which, I'd say, if anyone's familiar with Inishannon, it's a short distance away from the petrol station in Crossbarry. Now, Mr. Kelly, the prosecution barrister, said a local woman, Colette Kelly, was at her home that morning and she heard a revving engine sound from the kitchen of her house, and she went out to the crossroads and she saw a red Peugeot car driven by Mr. Palmer, who was known to her, and it was up against the embankment, and she and other locals went to the help of Paddy Palmer, but unfortunately Mr. Palmer died in hospital. He was taken to CUH and he died in hospital on January 8th, 2023. The prosecution barrister said that debris belonging to the grey BMW series car belonging to the accused was found at the scene of the collision. Now, the state's case, Neil, is that the accused man approached the junction, Mr. Bizver, he approached the junction, and that his part of the junction was allegedly had a stop line and a stop sign, and that they claim didn't stop at the stop line and stop sign, and they say that he would have had an unrestricted view, 150-metre view of the traffic coming from the direction of the late Mr. Palmer. Now, Mr. Bisver, he was arrested, and Mr. Kelly said he could be accused, allegedly admitted he was involved in a collision, but that he panicked and left the scene. And Mr. Kelly said in court that the phone of Mr. Bisver, he was analysed, And it's the state's case that is that he'd engaged in conversation with third parties in Russian, and they effectively, he admitted it was his fault, the prosecution barrister said. And Mr. Kelly said the state's case is that he was driving his car, sped up to this crossroad, came to a stop sign and went through it just as Mr. Palmer's car was coming to the crossroad, causing it to spin and collide with the embankment. So dangerous driving causing death is the issue that the jurors have to decide. Now, we also heard evidence, Neil, from Garda Jacinta O'Leary, and she said, this is very understandable, that it was the 29th of December 2022, and she said it's that kind of period between Christmas and New Year where, is it a Tuesday, is it a Wednesday, you know, it's just kind of that sort of strange period of Christmas. But she said they were informed that a small car was causing an obstruction at the petrol station in Crossbarry. So at about 9 o'clock that morning, she went into the shop and a member of staff told her the car was parked at the pumps. And she said the man standing next to the car spoke to her in two-word sentences of broken English. Garda O'Leary said she asked Mr. Bisverhi for ID, and he gave her a foreign driving license and his Irish Public Services card, and she took pictures of both. She said he'd very poor English, but he told her, no drive, car broke. She asked him if he'd been drinking, and he said no. And she said she was of the opinion that he wasn't intoxicated in any way when she spoke to him at the station. She said he was agreeable to moving his car out of the way of the pump. In his broken English, he managed to convey to her that somebody was going to come and help him with a tyre. They got a call to something else and left. And she was later called to the scene of the crash. So that was the evidence from Garda O'Leary. And then yesterday we had evidence from Assistant State Pathologist Margaret Bolster. And she said that the cause of death was traumatic brain and spinal cord injuries with thoracic injuries due to a road traffic collision. And Defence Counsel Seamus Roach put it to Dr. Bolster that Mr. Palmer wasn't wearing a seatbelt when the crash occurred. And Dr. Bolster said this would have led to an increased vulnerability for Mr. Palmer in the crash.
The defence counsel said the deceased wasn't wearing a seatbelt at the time of the collision, and he would have been thrown about the car, which would have resulted in head injuries, and that wearing a seatbelt would have been safer. He said, I don't wish to be unfair to the man, but he says this was a factor in the case.
He said this was a factor in the case. And he's so Dr. Bolster said, yes, there is a statistically higher rate of fatality with not wearing seatbelts. And she agreed that if a person travelling in a car in a collision, I suppose involved in a collision, was unrestrained, that that there was more tumbling. So we don't know yet, I suppose, what the defence case is going to be. But Seamus Roach, the defence senior counsel, gave us a kind of a slight indication yesterday. He said he alleges that Mr. Palmer was not driving in a safe manner for whatever reason, and was in fact on his incorrect side of the road. That is the nub of defence. And Mr. Brister, he claims, was trying to negotiate the cross as safely as he could.
Okay.
So, but as I say, that is not evidence. That is just what Mr. Roach said yesterday.
Okay, so this is early days, as you say. Much of this will
early
be laid
days.
Out in the coming
early
days.
Early days. Much is continuing today, that's right.
Thank you so much, Olivia. I appreciate
Thanks
it,
so
as
much.
Always.
Take care.
Olivia
Thanks,
Kelleher, a freelance
care.
Journalist covering that case. If there's an update early next week, we will return to it. Text 0868 104 106. Back after the break.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Get involved. Text 0868 104 106. Back to the phone lines we go. Independent Ireland Party leader Michael Collins, the West Cork TD, joins me by phone. Michael, good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Kitty?
You were in rare form for your interview with Hot Press there recently. If I were to sum it up, can I sum it up here if you don't mind?
Please, yeah.
You say prostitution should be legal. Abortion permissible in some circumstances, I get that. Rapists and paedophiles should be chemically castrated. Criminals should get an automatic 25-year sentence for their third conviction. people should be allowed to defend themselves with firearms. You said, I think that a person, if they have a legally held firearm and someone's going to hurt them or attack them, they should be able to use the firearm. I hate to think you'd shoot someone dead, but you could certainly shoot them in the legs or shoot over their heads. You say that asylum seekers should be held in holding bays and travellers should not be considered as an ethnic minority. It's a lot going on there, Michael.
There is, but look, in fairness, first of all, I disagree strongly with the headline they put out yesterday, which is unfair because people didn't get to read the contents. So one of the, we'll just say one.
What was the headline? Sorry, I have copy, but I don't have a headline. What was it?
Collins agrees that IRA bombers should be allowed to go to heaven. Well, actually, that was a discussion about Martin McGuinness. So when people see that headline, they'll all go, oh, mother of Jesus, what's going on here? Basically, they asked me, part of it was a tour interview, what was my views on Martin McGuinness and should he go to heaven? He was an IRA bomber. And I said, look, Martin McGuinness, I said, swapped the sword for the pin. And anybody, any man or woman that swaps the sword for the pin and creates peace in this country, surely be to God, there's a God up there that shows forgiveness and a person should go to heaven.
Yeah.
And I went on in detail about that. And I said how I attended at a very early stage of my political career, Martin McGuinness's funeral, not because I was a TD, because I respected what he'd done for this country and he created the peace. And I thought it was a bit unfair to put out that sensational headline yesterday before the magazine came out today that I said that.
Where was the headline published?
It was sent out to all the media outlets because somebody contacted me. Some people contacted me.
Oh, so it was the Hot Press interview sent it out then, yeah, to get coverage for it.
Yeah,
but you know, headlines are like that always. They're attention grabbing, you know?
Well, they are, but like I understand that Hot Press had to do that in relation, but I think it put a different reflection onto what the reality was. And he gave 10 minutes on, I could be wrong, but nearly 10 minutes on Martin McGuinness. I didn't get preempted as to what the interview would be like. The questions were just off the cuff, and I was giving a straight view as to the way what I felt going forward. And I was very strong on that, where Martin McGuinness is concerned. I felt that, you know,
that he should go to heaven. If there's a heaven, he's welcome there.
Yeah, if there's a God there, if there's a forgiving God.
You're entitled to your opinion. Headline is a bit.
He was very, very much on God. The interviewer was very much based on God and religion. He said that. So basically, if a woman comes to me that's had an abortion, that they, you know, you wouldn't put out the hand of friendship. I said, I would. I treat everybody the same. I'm totally opposed to abortion. But I said, he went on about Hannah Panav at the time, and I said, look, if a medical professional comes before you and tells you that it's either the mother or the baby, like, it's an awful situation that a woman finds themselves in, and you have to, decision had to be made. I said, I'd like to think that they take medical advice from more than one person, at least at that time, but obviously the mother's life has to be seen.
But in the case of it not being a risk to the mother's life, you'd be very much against it.
I'm very much against abortion. Yeah. I'll always be against abortion.
Right.
I felt that the interview twisted that slightly to the point that he's for abortion in certain ways, so he put out a wrong perception about me. And look, they're entitled to their view on it. That's the way I felt, that if a woman's life is in trouble, well, you have, and a medical decision is there. And you have to make that decision pretty quickly. It has to be, I hate to say this, but a common sense.
That's your opinion, to which you're entitled, but the referendum said very differently and people voted for a lot more than just that. Okay.
Absolutely. Okay. And I said that I also said to you that I would always oppose any future legislation to making abortion freer on demand for people, you know, for longer term abortions and stuff like that. I'd always be opposed to it. That's my belief. But on a medical sense and a choice to be made, who am I, so say, to question the medical person that's giving advice to the woman?
Okay.
And also, on a separate issue in relation to abortion, I would treat anybody that had an abortion with the same respect as I treat everybody else. I'm always opposed to it and I always speak of my opposition to it. But that was my personal view and that was my team on that. And now it's slightly twisted to the point that he was kind of more or less for certain types of abortion, but, you know, that's on medical advice.
That's what you said, on the basis of risk to the mother. So rapists and paedophiles should be chemically castrated.
Well, you know, if somebody is raping an innocent, in most cases it's an innocent woman, and somebody's raping an innocent child, you know, we have to, I suppose that whole area was based on are we too soft on in relation to crime in this country? And that piece about the rapists and the paedophiles came in, and also the three hits, and you get 25 years. We are going too soft on crime in this country. And if a woman, an innocent woman, is walking the street and she gets seriously raped by an individual, and it can be proven in the court of law that that person is, well, we have to make stronger moves on what we're making. If there's a paedophile out there that's harming young, innocent children, what are we doing? Giving him a couple of years and sending him back out to the society? And there has to be more serious consequences for serious crimes, Neil, and I'd be one that would, I hate to think that the people out there are doing crimes like this, and that this is what we're given no choice in the matter.
Is that an extreme step, though, chemically castrate a paedophile or a rapist? What about just a mandatory 20 or 25 year sentence that has to be served? You're saying chemical castration is because they'd be inclined to do it again, is it?
Well, that's the worry you'd have. I mean, if they've done it once, why wouldn't they do it again? That'd be my concern and my worry out there. And I'd be looking at the extreme cases here. And there is extreme cases, and there is cases where people are raped twice and paedophiles are struck twice and three times and four. And where do we stop? Like, what kind of a society are we leading to be? How many people can we house in jails continuously and still face the same worries and concerns after when they come back out? And the three hits in relation to crime, Neil, I think
that's... What if you chemically castrated somebody who subsequently, because this can happen, has had that conviction overturned and they were found not to have been a rapist?
But
how do you chemically reverse the castration?
Well, what I've said is that, you know, if it can be proven against any doubt in relation inside our courts that this person has done it, well, that's the route you take. Obviously, there's travesty of justices, and there's in a very small minority, but they are there, and there's no point in saying that. I've met people that were jailed for different reasons.
Yeah, like rape, well, you've castrated them, and in other places then, when we had capital punishment, we either shot them or we hanged them, and they were ultimately found to be innocent. I'm just throwing that out to you. You know?
I know, but you have to look at the majority cases here, and the poor innocent woman that's been absolutely, her life has been destroyed, and our child's life has been destroyed. We have to look at their scenarios, I think, in a lot more bigger sympathetic way than that of the person who has perpetrated a crime.
The person then who's been before and convicted three times, is that for any crime that they should automatically get 25 years?
Well, in our discussion, it was not serious crimes, like serious crimes. There's people going in and out of jail here. It's like as if they're passing away the time, and the state is paying for this mess.
The free legal aid costs them.
They're going back out and creating the same crime again and again and again, and it's just people are fed up to the teeth of it. There's people, businesses being robbed continuously, there's people being mugged continuously, and like, okay, you know, you have to look, there is a difference between a bit of soft crime and serious crime, but if you go hard on the serious crime and you send messages out there, you stop a lot of the crime.
Okay, so this is the three strike rule.
Yeah, we saw them in Dublin recently, how soft we were going on crime, where people were chasing Gardaí and filming the Gardaí to make sure that they'll react to try and see could they provoke a reaction from the Gardaí instead of our state being able to protect the Gardaí. So, like, we have to go harder on crime. And I don't see why we're not going harder on crime. If somebody is continuously breaking the law, and I'm not talking about someone... And of course, I'd be pulled on this, you know, go home with an extra pint, and like that's to me. But there is people out there breaking into people's homes, causing havoc to persons' property, personal belongings.
Three strike rule. Yeah, and if they get 12 months, of course, they serve maybe four or five out in good behavior. Jails are full. I get that. So 25 year sentence for the third strike. Breaking into people's homes. When you said that people should be allowed to defend themselves with firearms, is that primarily would be a rural issue where people, I don't know that many people in a city or suburban area would hold a legally held firearm, but they would in the country.
Quite a lot of people do, yeah. I'm not sure
particularly if they were engaged in farming and what have you.
They would, yeah, but if somebody's coming up your stairs, Neil, and you don't know who it is, good God, surely be the God, you're allowed the right to fire over someone's head. And maybe fire on a leg. I hate to think you'd fire on a body until you would know exactly who you're dealing with. But I mean, it's a frightening, shockingly frightening.
But that's lawful already.
and if it is, sorry, money is just stating the facts. I certainly didn't say someone should be shot dead, but what I said is that a person has a firearm, they should at least shoot over someone's head to frighten them, and to at least save their own lives or save their own property, at least give themselves the right. It has no law. You mentioned the country, it was a law in the country, and I often heard people saying that they had to shoot over someone's head to get them off their property in the night. Frighten them away. And I don't see a big reason. I think a lot of people understand that. You know, I'm not saying get out the gun and start shooting randomly at people, but certainly to save your own person and save your own family and save your own property.
You can't just shoot a burglar because they're robbing something in the house. You can shoot at them or over their head or injure them or wing them if they're coming at you.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. If you see someone inside you or barely see someone inside your dark home in the night and are in there for the wrong intention, well, I think that if you have a firearm, you should at least shoot over their head or shoot down low, so that at least you save yourself and save your family.
I can't wait to read the entire interview, but you said travellers should not be considered as ethnic minorities. Well, they have that status. Why shouldn't they?
Well, I believe, Neil, on the basis of that, is that people, I treat everybody the same, I suppose. Maybe everything I said there doesn't have to be right, and people don't all have to agree. But at the end of the day, people come into my office here, and they're travellers, and they're not travellers. I treat everyone the very same, and I said this. Well, I think what I said in that interview, with 2 hours, starting of everything, was that everyone should be treated with the same respect. So if a traveller comes into me this evening in Skibbereen or in Bandon tomorrow, into my clinic, I treat them the exact same as the person before. That wasn't a traveller, so I don't believe in statuses myself. I have no respect for them. I have the respect for the person, and the person is in.
But travellers die younger. They get sicker. Many of them live in halting sites with no running water. The children have a very, very difficult and tough upbringing. An awful lot of them would like to live in homes but can't. They get targeted for every single type of thing. Much of it's suspicion because of their background. So on all those bases, they can't get into pubs, they refuse drinks, they can't book weddings. Surely be to God, that would entitle them to special status.
Well, what I'm saying is that they should be treated equally as the same as the ordinary person if they're not causing crime and not causing a problem. And that's what I do with them here. They come into me and I don't care whether they're a driver, and I don't disrespect them in any way. If they're looking for a house, do my best to get them a home the same as I get for anybody else. And I don't believe because they have an ethnic status or anything else, I never ask them for their status. I just said, what's your name? Where are you looking? How can I help you? And walk with them. And I said, treat everybody the same. That's what I said in that interview, that everybody should be treated with respect and treated the same. And as I said to you, these people are going to be, they'll see that and they'll say, Jesus, you know, he doesn't believe in this. No two people think the same. And no two people agree.
No, I mean, I understand a lot of what you're saying will become the cornerstone of the Independent Ireland Party. And you're putting forward, at least 50 candidates across the country. So are you setting out the stall on behalf of the party? These are your beliefs also, that, say, for instance, prostitution should be legalised and sex workers should be looked after?
Well, what I said was, in fairness to that, was the biggest problem with prostitution is that they're being exploited by certain individuals. People are making a huge amount of money in relation to prostitution. So I said, I said the prostitutes themselves, they're innocent victims as far as I'm concerned, and they should be protected. But the people that are profiteering out of these people, that are bringing them into our country, that are making fortunes of money, the full rigour of the law should be applied to those people. That's what I said at the interview. And I said, I don't want to go after the innocent prostitutes, because in most cases they are innocent. And they are women that are mostly women that are in a desperate financial position. And I said, it isn't after them the state should be going, it's after the people that are profiteering from them and forcing them to go into this type of a business. That's where I stood.
But hasn't the law changed in that regard? Forgive me, I didn't get an opportunity to dig into it this morning, but hasn't it changed now where the crime really is the person who visits and uses the services of a sex worker, and the crime is against the pimp as opposed to the sex worker, isn't it?
Yeah, but in my interview I was asked, like, do I believe that prostitutes should be basically charged and treated as criminals? And I feel that they are being exploited. And what I said was, I'm not going to go down the road of talking about a prostitute as such. As far as I'm concerned, they're innocent victims here. I'm going after the pimps and all these people who are making fortunes of money from these innocent people, and the full rigor of the law should be applied.
And how do you do that? Are you saying that we should encourage the Dutch model, the Amsterdam model? Is it?
Well, not actually. What I'm trying to say is that first and foremost, we must protect these women. Most of these women are exploited by someone, and I say the most of them are women. They're exploited by someone, whether they're Irish or someone from abroad. They're actually being used by these people.
I know that you said that a number of times, but are you saying that because of their chosen profession, they are providing a service that should be legal and taxable and should be respected and looked after?
Well, what I'm saying, some people say they're providing service. At least treat these women with some of the respect, the terrible disrespect shown to them already, and they've been treated horribly to get into this country and to be used like the way they are by certain individuals. Okay. And I was more focused on the pimp and the person profiteering from these people more than to me, you know, people would say disagree with this, but they're innocent enough to a degree. They come in here, they're being exploited. I not come in here, but some are from inside.
Or some are trafficked as well. I get that. So are you glad you did the interview? Do you believe that what you have said really reflects what many people in Ireland would agree with and possibly vote for you? You're the leader of the party and those that are going forward.
Well, I believe that, look, it's like some members of my party would have said to me, you shouldn't have done the interview, but where do you stop? Do you refuse interviews? Do I refuse to come on the radio this morning? I don't. I take on interviews. Some are going to be twisted because some magazines or papers are left wing and they're going to twist the story. There was a lot of twisting done on this, in fairness, but the headline, that maybe more internally...
But do you regret any part of it? Do you regret that you said burqas should be banned in school? Would that be the hijab as well and scarves and everything, even though it is of religious significance to the student?
That was a whole area about immigration. You have no passport, no paperwork. I said that we should be looking at holding bays. I think that's what the country.
What's a holding bay, Michael? What describe
well,
that?
Well, we're going to have to look at, you know, building. They're talking about building modular homes in this country for immigrants in here, but certainly people that come into this country, and I've been very strong in that, and I'm not. That's not, surely be to God, we should all have the same viewpoint on that, because 75% people do. That if you have no passport or no paperwork, you shouldn't be allowed straight into this country until whatever it means. And I think some government official said they wouldn't be against holding some people in other countries before they come in here until they have their paperwork. So, like, and I always said we should slow the flow. I've always said that we should mind.
What's a hold? What is a holding bay? Is it a cage? Well, or is it a room? Is it a prison? Is it a dormitory? What is it?
Room. They're on about building modular homes. If there's a modular home, it's going to be obviously a normal sized room where people have facilities or whatever. But at least you know the person coming to the house into Ireland is fully, it has a full justification as to come in here, because some people are coming from a non-war
country.
And some people come in here with no paperwork, no passport, and we have to find a system that makes sure that the people of Ireland are happy. And this is, I think, on the new...
Strong opinions, of which I'm glad you got an opportunity to share with us this morning. So, do you regret the interview?
No, I don't. I don't ever regret an interview. What I don't like is that, you know, some media out there decided to jump on the headline without reading the content. So, like, if you put up, like, the headline was, Michael Collins says, all IRA bombers should go to heaven. That was very much based on Mark McGuinness and people, others, that swapped the paint,
that's,
the sword for the paint.
That's the point you made, something. Yeah.
Well, and I mean, I say that, and I warn them from saying that to ordinary people. And then when I tell them, for God's sake, sure, you know, I understand now. But, like, you wouldn't understand if you saw the headline.
The headlines are to grab people's attention. They're almost a form of clickbait, if you like. All right, Michael, thank you so much for taking the call this morning. We covered a lot of ground. Much obliged to you. West Cork TD, leader of the Independent Ireland Party, Michael Collins. I'd love your thoughts on all of that. There's a lot to digest. I get that. But do text 0868104106. Pick up the phone on 0818104106. You can also voice note me on WhatsApp 0868104106. We'll get all that to air.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
Be part of the conversation. The Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. It's a free food Friday, courtesy of ourselves and Camille Thai. And lunch for 15 of you from Camille Thai will be delivered directly to you, nice and hot from the Red Patrollers. We'll get it to you ASAP. You can order Camille Thai over the weekend on their app or at www.camillethai.ie. They got two branches in Cork, Bishopstown, and they got a dine-in in Douglas. So what have you got? Crispy chili chicken. Chicken green curry, the pad med mang ung, which is the minced chicken stir fry. There's cashews in there and peppers and carrots and onions and scallions and broccoli and chili and all sorts of stuff like that. There's a lovely vegan pad prick, which is tofu and cashew and scallions and beans and peppers, and then lots of jasmine rice and lots of brown and wild rice. So it'll feed 15 of you all together. The chicken green curry sounds nice. So does the crispy chicken, chili chicken. So all of that and lots more besides. So text who you are and where you are to 0868 104 106. I'm going to start the shout outs now. Last week's winners was Noreen's Hair Salon and White's Cross, and they came back to say thanks, Neil, to you and the team and the Red Patrollers who delivered the scrumptious Camille Thai food to us at the salon last Friday. We and all of the clients were well fed for the day. Thank you, Noreen and the gang, for coming back and saying thank you. The St. Patrick's Boys National School in Mallow, a terrific team there. They're all floored when they heard recently of the diagnosis of a young student, but they'd love a pick-me-up, and that's for everybody at the St. Patrick's Boys National School. Siva Logistics in Little Island, the 10 of us, they're all starving. Two of them are having birthdays this weekend, so it'll be a great way to celebrate, says Jack. Joe's Edge Hair Salon and Blarney are listening. Doc Decor Painters and Decorators. The Dairy Accounts Payable Department at Galty, they're starving. Morning to Ailish and all of the girls, they love the show. To everybody plastering outside at Newtown in Cove, they're at the petrol station, they're starving with the hunger. Plum Nail Bar in Douglas, Dell Cork Manufacturing Engineering Team, the Complete Upholstery Centre on Barrack Street, Ego Hair Studio at Ticknock and Cove, and one final one for now, O'Sullivan's Pharmacy on the South Douglas Road, Elaine and all of the staff. Somebody is retiring and another has a big 65th birthday. So keep those shout outs coming. Text who you are and where you are to 0868 104 106. Just staying for a moment on a very revealing, firstly, it's a hot press interview with Michael Collins, but he didn't hold back this morning. We covered an awful lot of ground. So I'd love to get your thoughts on everything he had to say or any specific aspect of what he said, what you might agree or disagree with. One of them had to do with his thoughts then with regards to this is the copy now that made the Examiner. Prostitution should be legal, abortion only permissible in some circumstances. He said other things like rapists and paedophiles should be chemically castrated. He also spoke about the fact that we should have holding bays for asylum seekers. Travellers should not be given ethnic minority status. He said you should be allowed, if you hold a legally held firearm, to, if you're going to be put at risk, you should be allowed to use the firearm, not necessarily kill somebody with it, but so all of that, and also that anybody who's been before the courts and found guilty three times should automatically get a 25-year prison sentence. But I just want to put one of those points to Kate McGrew, sex worker and activist, because she was also listening to what Michael had to say this morning. So Kate, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Not at all. What did you make of what Michael had to say, particularly regarding your own profession?
Yeah, for our particular issue, his call for Ireland to look at a legal model is extremely welcome in this moment. His view aligns with health organizations and human rights organizations across the world, including the World Health Organization, Amnesty International, and the Global Alliance Against Traffic of Women for best protection for sex workers. And this is based on evidence. It's based on what sex workers tell of our lived experience. And we'd be able to do this with a legal model, which we obviously don't have now, if we could be afforded labor rights like other workers and the ability to, for example, unionize.
But the law did change recently, didn't it, Kate? How did it change and impact on your profession? It moved the illegality away from the sex worker, didn't it?
Well, it actually increased illegality around sex workers themselves as well. So it was always legal to sell sex alone, but now for the first time, our clients were criminalized, and also the illegality of working as a worker in pairs or groups.
Yes.
The penalty for that tripled, and workers can now face a potential jail sentence. So it really needs to be understood that this is increased criminalization, and it really did a lot to push the industry further underground,
which
has been entirely unhelpful.
And is the word brothel a fair and acceptable word to use when you talk about working in a group?
Well, unfortunately, the legal definition of brothel in this country is two or more workers. So what that means is, in order for a worker to work legally, she has to be perfectly alone. Obviously, that's ideal. We would be safer if we could be in the company of anybody else.
Obviously, you would be safer if you were with others. I get that. Have there been prosecutions?
So there have been sweeps of Gardaí taking people to courts and not being prosecuted. So it's unfortunately, it's largely a symbolic law at this point. And there has been pressure around stepping it up in terms of acting out the criminalization. But what that has manifested like for workers is Gardaí posing as clients to sometimes interrogate the workers themselves, and has merely for us served as distancing and damaging the relationship that we have with Gardaí. And unfortunately, it's entirely unhelpful for our clients to be criminalized, you know, attacking, robbing a sex worker, trafficking, coercion. These things were always illegal. A law to make it illegal to purchase sex isn't going to deter these people.
Okay,
so you
have moved on to the safety aspect of your job and your chosen profession. Can it be unsafe?
It can, of course. And there are a few reasons that are converging that make the sex industry particularly susceptible to criminality. A huge one, the biggest one really, would be the illegality. You know, traffickers and people who seek to exploit us, they thrive on a black market, you know, because they're the only show in town. So we absolutely, what we argue for is decriminalization, our legal avenues, our safe, vetted spaces, and recourse to justice, you know, the ability to interact with authorities without suffering repercussions ourselves, and the ability to have somebody to interact with within the industry who's not deemed a criminal.
Yeah. Do you have experience or examples of people who've been trafficked into Ireland as sex workers from overseas?
Yes, I was the director of Sex Workers Alliance Ireland for 6 years.
Okay.
And so we would have had very close contact with people of all kinds of situations like that.
Could you give a typical what were you going to say there about yourself?
Just that as a worker myself on the ground, you know, we communicate a lot with each other. And even though people try and make these channels, again, they get pushed underground and made illegal, and they have the illegality of advertising has meant that there is essentially one place of advertising. And so basically we're just left with fewer and fewer options. But okay, to answer your question, yes, we helped workers who, for example, came over to Ireland thinking they were going to be doing one thing.
Okay, so just give us a typical example as to where they would come from, what they had to, what it cost them to get here, whom they paid, and what they were told they were going to be doing when they got here.
Yeah. So although I did talk to many people who came over knowing what they were doing, what they were going to do, knowing that it was going to be sex work. But when they came over here, the people that had helped them with their travel basically saying, oh, this isn't going to cost $5,000. It's going to cost $50,000. So now we're going to take your passport and you're going to have to work day and night until you make the money back. So what we seek as sex worker rights advocates is the ability to contact and interact with these people who are suffering on the sharp edge of exploitation that can occur in an industry. We fight for decriminalization for these people specifically, yeah, to make these cases fewer and fewer. And not to just take some model from another country and slap it down as they did with this so-called Swedish model, but to interact with legislators and sex workers ourselves about what it could really look like, how it would really look realistic in Ireland.
But so, I understand that, but just staying on those that come in, are these at the hands of overseas gangs who bring them in here? Or, you know, the word pimp is used. Mm-hmm. Is that still an acceptable term to use, pimps?
Yeah, I mean, in the situations that we saw like that, most of the time they were, you know, honestly, it would be sort of people that know people. It would be people that their family knew, people that they knew in their community. It was generally what we were seeing, even though we know that there is organized crime, but would be very sort of unorganized crime. You know, we don't at all downplay the existence of what happens. It's that for these situations, particularly, and for exploitation that can occur across the spectrum, we say we need to be able to find people easier. We need to open up the channels with authorities, with Gardaí, and we need for people to have other alternatives once they arrive in this country. You know, especially if they want to continue to work, fine, let them be working in a vetted space, but providing alternatives which this law purported to do and did nothing about.
Okay, so there would be some that would come willingly wishing and wanting to engage in the profession, but he's saying that others would do it out of absolute desperation or poverty.
Yes, I mean, so the sex industry, it's filled with people on the margins in every single kind of way. It will always be, it always has been, and it will always be the kind of work that people can do if they have little to nothing else. And that is one of the reasons why people be very susceptible to being taken advantage of. And again, it's why, let me say it like this, Neil, civilization was created to put parameters around animal nature, right? And so what we're dealing with is an illegal industry, unfortunately, which compounds the problem, but also where you're dealing with people's animal nature, if you will, where you know, sex the most primal of things that we do. So particularly, especially for this arena, we must be willing to do what it takes to draw lines, however they're going to look, to include us and acknowledge us within society.
Because
we have been here, we will always be here.
Yes.
And it just does us worse and worse.
But it must be very unsafe for somebody like yourself, Kate, and others, in a one-to-one with another person, a stranger, the possibility of being robbed, beaten up, physically assaulted, sexually assaulted, raped. It comes at a huge risk, doesn't it?
It is work that people know the risk of when they're engaging in it. You know, it's, these things aren't mutually exclusive. It's why we suggest, okay, how do we improve this marginally? We have to be willing to do what it takes to make steps towards marginal improvement. You know, and so that's what we call for. Decriminalization would not at all be panacea. And it would just be the beginning of being able to have a sort of infrastructure that sex workers could at least engage with whilst we go, okay, why are you doing this work? Do you want to do this work? If not, what other kind of work would you like to do, and how can we support you to do that? So,
but you would be, I don't mean to over-personalize, but you would be an example of somebody who wants to do the work. It's your chosen profession.
Yes. And you know, that does exist. It's, you know, it's understandable why people always want to talk about the hard edge of what can happen in an industry and so what happens in the sex industry. But of course there exists many, many, many people who do this work because it suits them best for their lifestyle, for their personality, for many different reasons. You know, it is a really tricky arena to navigate and can be a bit of a minefield. It's not completely invaluable.
Well, it's a minefield and also a mind field. Do you have to switch off part of your brain or switch off your emotions with a client?
Well, I mean, that's, I'm not sure what leads you to saying that besides maybe what you've seen in pop culture, you've heard different places, but, you know, since you bring it up, I can tell you that everybody works differently.
Yeah.
For myself, for example, that's not the way I work. I find it more exhaustive if I were to try to, say, put my mind somewhere else For me, it's very much engaging with the person. Okay. I've always been very much a people person, and so that's how I do this work.
Well done. That's an honest answer. Thank you for it. So in the event of it then being absolutely 100% legal above board, where people could visit, what would the term be? A salon or something? Or where there would be advertising? Would it be like the Dutch model? Would sex workers be registered? I mean, do they pay tax already? Or would they, under the legal model, pay tax from PRSI and things like that?
Yeah, so I pay tax, for example, you
okay,
know, but once we're talking about the minutiae, which is the sort of nitty-gritty, the important parts of it, the vetting and the zoning and the things like this, we're in such better standing, and we really look forward to being in that place at all. And again, I'll just repeat that it would have to be something that specifically suits Ireland. It doesn't really suit to just look at another country and disregard their history and disregard the geography and the demographic and try and slap it onto Irish society.
Well, give me an example of what you think might work in Irish society, finally. I mean, we know of red light districts, and we know of the way it was in, say, Soho years ago in London, and we also know the Amsterdam model. Is it something along one of those lines, or would it be a zone in a city, or what?
Well, there is also decriminalization would be a sort of flexible legal model that more realistically can be applied and be a sort of safety net for sex workers and all our diversity. And by that I mean the problem with a model like the German model and the Dutch model is that an over-regulation of legalization tends to make for the bulking up of a black market again, because there aren't very many people who can cross all the T's and dot all the I's. And so what we would look for is something more like the model in Belgium, more like the model in New Zealand.
What's that? Australia. What is the Belgian model, as an example?
Sure. So it's they would call it decriminalization, and it's a flexible model of legalization. And for example, in New Zealand, people would apply for different kinds of licenses around different ways it might suit them to work. Is it working with two people? Is it working with four people that's a sort of co-op? Is it working with four people with one person who does the bookings and one person a security on the door? There is licensing and vetting for this as well. That's more the model that seems realistic when you're really trying to take care of the diversity of people's experiences in this work.
Okay, good stuff. Covered a lot of ground. Kate, thank you so much for taking the time this morning. Do appreciate it. Kate McGrew, text 0868104106. Get your thoughts on that one. Covered a lot of ground with both Kate and indeed Michael. Text 0868104106. On the topic of $1 million a month on Ukrainian pets, any chance you might play Who Let the Dog Out for Micheál Martin, says Frick. I like it. Ba-boom. I'm furious about my tax money going to helping Ukrainian animals. My daughter goes to a special needs school. Only half of the students in third year are accepted into transition because the school doesn't have enough funds for an extra classroom and teacher. 12 million a year on dogs could go an awful lot help to help people in Ireland instead of importing dogs and cats. And one other one on that. I pay tens of thousands of tax, VAT and corporation tax. This, I believe, was to run the country, not to pay for Ukrainian safety. This is all good. That said, 1 million a month for pets is for me the last straw. And I'll not vote for this government again. I have a relative whose child is very challenged. They get no sleep, no rest. They get one night's rest a week. And more often than not, that gets cancelled due to staff being out sick. And yet we pay $1 million a month for pet care from people we took for safety. I'm sick of this mess. I won't vote Sinn Féin, as I fear they would install a very dangerous judiciary while in power, but I won't vote for the current crew either. And most certainly, I won't vote for right-wing Ireland First. That leaves me then as what? A non-voter. All due to the mismanagement of my money. Keep those texts coming. Text 0868104106.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868104106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
I'll talk to Margaret in a second about the 1 million a month for Ukrainian pets, but I was telling you earlier on there was a survey done recently that said that the average cost of a wedding in Ireland is €33,083. So €33,000. grand. That doesn't include the honeymoon, incidentally. The average honeymoon budget then is an extra 5.5 grand. You're asking the question, are weddings very expensive? I'll get to some of those comments. So €33,000 in Ireland, the UK average cost is just over £19,000. Even when you make the change and convert from pounds to euro, it's significantly cheaper, it would seem, to get married in the UK. But I mentioned it was because this bride pretty much told a barefaced lie to the hotel, said we're having a party for friends. It was actually the wedding, but she didn't say it was a wedding because she felt that she'd be charged way too much. Now, some of the pushback involved, and they found out ultimately, as I told you, because she then shared the photographs of the wedding and the hotel got very odd about it. But somebody said there's no reason why a wedding should cost more, but they mark it up to scam you. I don't know whether that's disrespectful to people getting married or it's disrespectful to the hotels to call it a scam. Probably not cheap would be a better way. But if I can only remember, I think in and around 1992, when we got married, I think it was about £30 at the time a head for the food, about 30, and that would have been a typical starter, main course, beef or salmon, that kind of thing, profiteroles. But Seamus was telling me in 2013, he got married and it cost 10.5 grand. There was 80 people at it. That works even in 2013, I should say, for 80 people. That worked out at €130 a plate. When I say a plate, that's the food costs in it. So that seemed a lot. There would be wine included in that as well. So maybe that makes the difference. But anyway, some other examples from you guys. I was telling you €130 a plate up the country, and that was cheap. There were others that were actually more expensive. Our own cost €145 a head, Neil. And I did only look around Dublin, Wicklow, Kildare and Meath, but it went up to 160 a head up there. So 100 up to 160 up in the counties around Dublin, down here 140. But that included a four-course dinner, half a bottle of wine per head, canapés, two Proseccos or two beers per head at the drinks reception, 145. Hard pushed to find a day in a four-star hotel for less than 100 to 120 for a half-decent meal. And that's a couple who wouldn't have been too fussy about food. So 100 to 120. And a venue in East Cork can vary from 80 to €125 a head. Cost depends on how many options you want to have with the meal, like just a choice of, say, one starter, or if you give them a choice of starters, then it goes up. Also, it depends on various additions like canapés, a welcome drink, Prosecco, cocktail or beer usually. Your cost depends on how much you have to spend. But on average, it could be 80 to 120. That's from somebody who checked various venues in East Cork. So keep those coming. Text 0868 104 106. With the cost of, because some of the time people would say that the minute that a venue, like a hotel or whatever, hears that it's a wedding, the prices just go one way and that's up. The same can be said for hair and makeup, or indeed the band or the photographer, videographer, and things like that. So text 0868 104 106. Back to the phone lines. My apologies. Margaret, good morning.
Morning.
You are incensed to hear that we are spending €1 million a month on refugees' pets.
Yeah. And I have to pay €500 because it's not covered by my medical card for the injection for shingles. I don't have shingles. I have rheumatoid arthritis, but my medication is stronger.
So do you have to pay €500 a month?
No. €500 for two injections.
How often?
I won't get shingles.
How often do you get the injections?
I must just get two.
Okay.
But it's not covered by a medical card as well.
Okay.
And then, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So you have to shell out 500 while the government have their priorities around cats and dogs.
And I mean, I'm 76, right? I can't move unaided. I've only the state pension, which is the lowest you can get. And the boys are all parked up outside the pub last week in Dublin. Some round of drinks would have paid for me to inject.
They were all parked up outside a pub with their ministerial mercs outside, and they're all inside celebrating Simon Harris's role as Taoiseach.
Listen, I said we'd be better off with Donald Trump, and that's saying something. He can't be any worse than this crowd.
So, what do you think they should be doing with the pets, the dogs, and the cats that are coming in?
No, nothing against the poor cats and the dogs. And
there's 1,800 of them.
I know, Jesus, they should look after the people first and then go to the animals. I mean, there's ads on every day and every night on the television about how bad shingles is for you. And I'd be prone to it, as I say, because of the medication.
Yeah, yeah.
So I must get the two injections, and they're €250.
And why aren't they each injection at €250? Why they're €250 each? Why aren't they covered on your medical card?
I don't know. No one knows.
And will you have the money to pay for it?
Huh? Oh yeah, my family will pay for it.
Yeah. When you need help, of course, you find that it's not there for something that you need help with. You know, that's the sad thing about it. It's the priorities are all in the wrong places.
But
yeah.
Just the thought of it. I'm fuming over it.
Well, there you have it. Okay.
So there's nothing I can do.
All right.
Anyway, if my family, well, of course, they insisted on paying, but I'd have to take it out of my funeral money.
Ah.
And that was listen, that was going towards my ashes to be scattered at Old Trafford.
Really?
Yeah, really.
Can you do that?
Well, you could put it down your sleeve, I suppose.
And is that the plan, like?
Well, I hope, Trill, if one of them will do it.
All right, firstly...
They might tell me they'll do it, and they mightn't do it at all.
Hold on a second. If they promise, they will. Are you a big Man United fan?
Oh, God, yeah.
All your life?
Yeah. Before you were born, I'd say.
Back to the Busby Babes and all that?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And have you gone to Old Trafford on a number of...
I have.
Right.
I have. My son took me to Old Trafford.
Right. And why...
And I'd love to go again.
Why Man United, like, all your life?
Oh, I don't know. It was something... Well, not now they're a disgrace. But I mean, I'm still not going to... I'm not going to be one of the ones that just support them when they're playing good.
So you stick with them through thick and thin, yeah. The good days and the bad.
Oh, God, yeah.
So the plan is...
As I'm speaking to you now, I'm looking up at the wall and I have a beautiful framed picture of me with Eric Cantona.
So was he your favourite, or was it Roy Keane or Dennis Irwin or...
No, Georgie Best,
Eric. Or... No?
Listen, when George Best died, I got a message from...
Well done.
Oh my God.
You're a hard case.
And for Mother's Day, I got a most beautiful framed picture of Cantona, signed and all.
And tell me, did you ever meet Cantona? Our best, or
I told you I did. I got a picture taken with him.
Oh, I just thought it was someone gave you a photograph. Where'd you meet him?
It was in the Silver Springs years ago.
And did you have a conversation with him?
Well, listen, you'll be sorry you rang me because I can't shut up. it was a charity thing, but it was £100 a ticket at the time. And my sons bought it for me, right? And the numbers were limited. So they said after the meal, Cantona would go around to each table and sign one autograph for each person.
Yeah.
He comes to me anyway, and I've my two sons with their two number seven jerseys up on the table to get his autograph. And he just looked and he says, "One signature." And I looked at him and I said, "Twins." And he signed it, but the two boys are 10 years a pair.
But the most famous Man United of them all is Roy Keane, for God's sake. Surely it's a photograph with Roy you want.
No.
All right. Okay. Well, tell me this then. Don't you go dying anytime soon, but when it is your time and you're cremated, who has the job to go to Old Trafford and sneak in your urn and your ashes?
My son, he will do it.
And he'll do it, will he?
He won't. They'll probably tell me just to shut me up.
And they'd never lie to their mammy about that, Margaret. I mean, they probably won't be able to get out onto the pitch to spread the ashes. It probably would be under their seat.
Anywhere at all it'll do.
Not all of them, though. Is it not all of them, just a pinch, is it?
Any bit at all. Even my meals to do.
Stop.
One more minute before you go, right? Next Eric and myself in the photograph, I have another framed photograph of myself up on the stage in the Opera House with the Chippendales. And you gave me the tickets to it.
My fault.
You did.
I hope you left your clothes on, did you?
Well, I did, but they didn't. That was the important thing.
That was the main thing. Get them off.
Right.
Go on. Good luck. Bye. Crazy lady, Margaret Collins. Hale and hearty at 76. Okay, it's Free Food Friday, courtesy of ourselves and Camille Tye. Some more shout outs for you this morning. EMH Technical Services in Ballincollig. Everybody at Ballyfihan Healthcare. Simotech. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Simotech in Carrigaline. Brighten up a dull day. Stryker in Tullagrena. Morning to you all. Guys and Dolls Hair Salon. Euro Car Parts at Sarsfield Road in Wilton. Smurf at Kappa at Pollard Duff Industrial Estate. ECIJCB in Carrigtool. Leas Nanog Creche on the Tremor Road for this well-deserved lunch. Everybody at Pro Valley at Mahon Point. Got a car done there once. It's super work they do. Pro Valley in Mahon Point. Morning to Eric and all of the gang down there. Irish Express Cargo at Dublin Hill. Cuddles Creche on Douglas Street. The Civil Registration Office on Anglesey Street. Now that is a hard working bunch of people, I can tell you. LA Beauty Salon in Clonakilty. The Buying Office at Blarney Woolen Mills. Barter's Travel in Douglas. Galvin Donegan Solicitors, 91 South Mall. This is the quote of the day. From all at Galvin Donegan Solicitors, 91 South Mall, show us the food and this can all go away. Just love it. Pampered Paws in Middleton, Rycal.ie in Kanturk, Clean Energy Ireland in Calumny, and just three more. The teachers in Middleton Educate Together would love lunch. They've been a massive support to all his students, particularly during the year. Let's Party do Hallow in Kanturk, and finally Merview Laboratories in Watergrass Hill. Love the show and would love some feeding. So get those texts in. We'll do another bunch of shout outs in the next half an hour. So text who you are and where you are to 0868 104 106. Camille Thai will prepare all of the food. The Red Patrollers will deliver it. All sorts of beautiful Thai food from Camille Thai. There's a huge range of vegan and vegetarian options on the shelf. You can check them all out. www.camille.ie. Camille.ie. Back after the break.
Call Neil now. 0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Busy morning, Charlie. Good morning.
Good morning, Neil. Nice to talk to you.
You too. You've broken down the million a month for the cats and dogs, have you?
Yeah, it's €555 a week, and it's €6,660 a month. Now, Neil, come on.
No, hang on a second. It's €555 a month, and it's 6,660.
A week. €555 a week, and it's 6,660. Per dog per year.
What? Is that 555 per dog or cat? Is that a kennel cost, would you think, per week?
No. I have one cat at home and he cost me about €50 a month on food. How in the name of God can Fianna Fáil allow this to happen? €1 million a month, Neil. It's crazy.
You were saying that you'd get better value in a Coolmore stud.
You get better value in Coolmore, to be honest with you. Seriously, like, if you understand this money that's going out. I listened to your radio there one time. A man couldn't get his fuel allowance because he had a boat. If you remember, he had a boat in his backyard and they said, how can you afford a boat whatever. And, like, he was only gone over €13 and he couldn't get the heat. But these people coming into the country. Now, in fairness, we know what's going on, but this is after really taking the biscuit.
I'll tell you I'll tell you another one that I dealt with last month. I had three or four different emails, because I started with one email and then I got more and more of them. And this was where the Department of Social Welfare must have done a dive into different people's circumstances, and they just, without any contact at all, they just sent out a letter telling people that they were being cut off.
Yep.
Of their disability allowance. Yeah. Cut off. Now, the first one that I got was from a very vulnerable young man who's got all sorts of psychological issues going on in his life and very rarely goes out and couldn't hold down a job or anything. And they decided, in their wisdom, to cut him off. Totally. As in, like, how is he supposed to live his life? But they can find a million a month then for 1,800 dogs and cats.
Yep. It's crazy. It's great. Neil, this is our tax money. I was telling your colleague there that I'm so fed up of the way Ireland is run and listening to all the lies and that, like, of Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, and don't even talk to me about the Green Party. The lies that they're telling people, and they're corrupt to the
One of the state officials who was trying to defend this recently said that pets are extremely important, particularly to children, often the first or second most important thing in their lives outside of their family. Would you think that could be, it's a compassionate thing?
Oh, Neil, like, we all love dogs and we all love cats and animals. Any animal, we all love it, like. But this is just great. But I can't ask or get a tax relief on if I have 10 dogs in my house and I have to feed them. There's a lot of people have a lot of dogs and they just love them so much that they'll feed them, but they're not getting help from the government of €1 million a month, like.
And you know, I hate being down on people who have come here, but not all of the 1,800 dogs and cats actually came from Ukraine. There was a fairly sizable chunk of them
in Ireland.
Were got here.
Like, if it was the case that they bought them, they knew that they were going to get this money, so that's the reason why they're buying them.
But
if we were getting this money off of the state, we'd be buying loads of dogs. Like.
Where did the cost? Well, you're not going to get it because the same rule wouldn't apply.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that if we did get it,
okay,
everybody would have.
So $1 million a month. You divided the million by 1,800, did you?
Yeah.
Okay, and you came up with this 555
euros.
And tell me, do you have any idea as to where that money is spent? I mean, I see in the papers this morning, they're saying 1,800 dogs and cats and other animals to stay in hotels and other state-funded accommodation. So it's not even kennels. It's in the accommodation centres themselves. What would that be?
Even, Neil, if they have a rented house and they're keeping the dog in the house, it's not... The point is, it's our money... It's €1 million.
I know that, but I'm trying to work out where is the 70-odd euro a day being spent on the cat or the dog? How?
It's not. It couldn't be, Neil. It couldn't be. Like if you have a dog, it's not going to cost you 70 euros a day to keep him going. And you're not going to put him into kennels. And if they are going into kennels, they should be, like, if they're not every week for 52 weeks of the year.
Okay.
They're not going to do that.
Okay, so you're not genuinely thinking of selling up and bailing out, are you?
Oh yeah, for 100%. In the next 2 years, I'll be gone out of this country. Like if I go over my 48,000 a year that I'm earning, which is nice. It's a nice money. It's nice earning. But if I go over that, I'm getting taxed 42 cents in the pound.
Where would you go?
I'm going to Spain. But in the thinking of it, Neil, if I'm giving them the tax money, if I'm giving them 200 quid extra a week, like, I'm giving it to somebody else for their dogs and cats to rear.
Well, you can be sure of it anyway. Whatever you give them, you won't get back any value out of it. That's the way it is. But tell me, why? Okay, so are you on your... Do you have a family or do you have children? Or are you a sole trader?
My family is reared up and myself and my wife decided that we're going to sell the house and move away from this country.
Okay.
The weather is really, like, if you think of it, they've said since last July we got 18 dry days. And
is that true? Is that true?
Yeah, well... They said that, yeah.
18 dry days since last July?
Since the end of last July, yeah. That's what they were saying on one of the news. But it's not that, it's just that the weather, the politicians, the corrupt that's going on in this country, I'm just absolutely fed up.
Will you work there or will you retire there or what?
No, I'll retire there.
Okay, have you a spot in Spain that you're thinking of? Will you buy something?
Between Alicante and Termolinas. Malaga, someplace around there.
All right. And will you get yourself a little villa or an apartment with a pool or what?
Yeah. Yeah, we'll buy something anyway over there, Neil. I don't know, will there be a pool there, but sure, we'll buy something.
Well, if you buy it in an apartment complex with all of the trimmings, there'll be a pool there for you. It'll come with it.
But then there's a monthly fee.
There's
on that.
Yeah, so
we're trying to do away with that. Like, but look, if we can get over there and we can suss ourselves out, and
be a lot cheaper though, won't it?
A lot cheaper, Neil. And I don't think the Spanish government are giving €1 million.
Right.
A month for Ukraine or whoever comes into the country's animals.
Okay, stay in touch, Charlie. Let me know what you do next, all right?
All right, thanks.
Cheers, pal. Have a good weekend. Text 0868 104 106. Pick up the phone, 0818 104 106. Yesterday was World Parkinson's Awareness Day. We had a lovely conversation on the air with Tony Wilkinson yesterday. He lives with Parkinson. He fights it. Parkinson doesn't like him, he said on the air, because he fights back. Marie says, that was such an inspirational man. May he be around for many a long year. Glad to hear that Tony is down here in West Cork, where he is welcome. Yes, indeed. Tony and his wife resettled down to Bandon. Great interview with Tony Wilkinson, Neil. When someone is diagnosed with Parkinson's, it's important to remember that the entire family will be living with Parkinson's, especially the spouse. We recognise this and have set up a carers forum specifically for people caring for people with Parkinson's. We meet every 3 months and it's facilitated by a qualified psychotherapist, says Kate Wilkinson down in Bandon. Another one or two then on different topics of conversation from yesterday. Of course, Michael Collins was saying that criminality is just gone off the charts. We're not serious about tackling it. We're not serious about sentencing. And along comes this one. Wanted to get in touch to let people know about all of the cars that have been broken into around Cork, especially recently the area of Carrigaline, Crosshaven, Kinsale, Belgooley and Riverstick. Not only are cars being robbed by these thugs, but sometimes they're breaking into cars and taking personal items like coats and sunglasses and money, anything they can take. Neil, please warn people that this is happening. Lock your cars. Don't leave anything in them. The Gardaí are trying their best and it must be very disheartening for them. They have taken some fingerprints from some cars, but apparently these guys are now using plastic gloves. If people think it's only happening in their area, it isn't. It is happening in a lot of places, everywhere if you like. And I know of Carrigaline, Crosshaven, Kinsale, Belgooley and Riverstick. Thank you for those. Text 0868 104 106. Back after 11.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
A lot of shout-outs for you. Oh, incidentally, I was in town from time to time doing a few bits and pieces. I was into Hickey's Hardware and they're listening all of the time in there. So a big good morning to everybody in Hickey's. They've been there many, many years doing great work. Also, you're talking about weddings this morning, Neil. Yes, I was. You're talking about the cost of weddings, but more importantly, the cost of the food that you serve your guests. It seems to be very expensive to me. If you're looking at anything between 80 and 120 or 130 euro, it seems like a lot of dosh, because if you looked at the food and you bought it in a regular situation as opposed to a wedding, it would cost you significantly less, wouldn't it? So the wedding puts, the fact that it's a wedding venue or a wedding function seems to I'm not going to say zeros on it, but in some cases doubles the price. Anyway, you're talking about weddings. Could you please wish the very best to Caroline and Jen from Sparkle, the band Sparkle. They're getting married in Oriel, the Oriel Hotel, beautiful hotel in Ballincollig today. You had them on the air after their engagement from the stage at Cork Pride a couple of years ago. You know who they are. Yes, I do. A great time for them. Two great girls and fabulous, fabulous musicians. So have a great day today. Congratulations to Caroline and Jen from Sparkle. Michael Collins, the TD, they've set up their own political party. I think it's about time the taxpayers started protesting and questioning as to where their hard-earned cash is going these days. A lot of people picking up in my conversation with Michael Collins. If you missed it earlier on this morning, we covered a lot of ground on aspects of Irish society that he has strong opinions on. I totally agree with Michael and all his comments, as the government has gone soft on crime for years. And on the Martin McGuinness point, he was asked the question, should Martin McGuinness be allowed to go to heaven? Martin did nothing that Michael Collins didn't do 100 years ago. Same with Nelson Mandela. Our leadership always praises them. Neil, in the name of God, has his policies are off the wall. He's the same person who was opposed to euthanasia. I hope he's voted out in the next election, says Bridie in Toker. I'll come back to euthanasia. It'll probably be our self-assisted dying. on Monday. Michael, after his conversation with you this morning, will certainly be getting my vote. He makes an awful lot of sense. One or two more here on that. Most of what the man is saying is spot on. It's common sense. He says what a lot of people are thinking. I hope you're well. Just heard the interview with Michael Collins. I agree with everything he said. He's the best politician in Cork by 100 miles. Ask anyone in West Cork, says Finbar Harrington. Does Michael, with his populist ideas, think that the Irish immigrants should be kept in holding centres as well? Overseas. He is obviously using this to stir up hatred to all sorts of minorities. They are certainly not Christian values. And two more on this. I agree with every single thing he said, apart from his issue with abortion. A pity there are not more politicians who have the guts to say what they really think, says Sean. And only in Ireland. Come on in. Here's the welfare. Here's the accommodation. Here are the free doctors. And here is your free pet care. Where else would you get it? I can't come on air because I'm working 60 hours a week to support me and my family. And I'm trying to put my daughter through college, and I get nothing for free. Then there's reams of them then coming in with regards to the cost of Ukrainian pets. More on that in a few minutes' time. If you thought that Sean Meehan up in County Tipperary is the only person that's getting grief over there where they live. Now, Sean, in his case, built himself a log cabin on his own land. But Cork Beo have been reporting of a woman in West Cork who's fighting to keep her home and her beautifully landscaped gardens. She has also received an enforcement order, but her one is from Cork County Council. The backstory to this is very interesting, and Helen O'Sullivan is the independent candidate for Bantry Local Council. Now, the woman involved in this is Sarah Williams, but she's just not talking live on radio. Just doesn't suit everybody. And I respect that. I appreciate that. So Helen is here to tell the story. Helen, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are you?
I'm good. I've seen some beautiful photographs of the landscape gardens and the scrubs and the scrubland and everything that it was. And she's done a beautiful job with her little patch of... She bought the land, didn't she?
She did, Neil, yeah. I mean, it's absolutely amazing what she has done. She has completely transformed it. When she purchased the land back in 2019, it was only like scrub. It was all overgrown and all furze bushes. You couldn't even get into it. But now, as you can see from the pictures, Neil, it's just absolutely amazing. She is lovely. Ponds and landscaping done. It really is very nice and fairness.
She's done the driveway beautifully. She's got trees up the line of it, up the driveway. She's got potted plants. She's got a lovely, beautiful balcony. Here's the problem, Helen. All of that is the home of a mobile home.
That's right, Neil.
Yeah.
And, you know, it has been Sarah's home for the last number of years as well. And, you know, she's in an awful situation now, Neil, because she's after getting an enforcement notice and she's going to be taken to court on the 22nd of May. And they want her to demolish the log cabin and they want her to put everything back to the very same way she had it before she moved in.
Put it back put it back to scrubland, to dig up the 80 yeah. trees, fill in the small pond, get rid of all the beautiful shrubs and flowers and everything, get rid of the mobile home and the decking and the terracing and everything, and just put it back the way it was.
Yeah, it's frightening, really. I couldn't believe it when I drove out to her on Wednesday and had a look at the place and she told me her story. I mean, like, the poor woman is going through enough. She had cancer treatment herself last November and she has to be monitored on a regular basis, and she's been told by her doctor, you know, to be, you know, keep away from stress, be in a stress-free zone. So with getting this notice, Neil, on top of everything else, herself and her pets, she's just afraid she's going to be made homeless, you know, and it's just not on. I suppose, I think, you know, common sense is not so common anymore, Neil, unfortunately. And she'd done everything right. She purchased the 3 acres back in 2019. She applied for planning. She was refused. She appealed it. She was refused again.
She had two refusals. Do they give reasons why they refuse and then uphold the refusal?
Yeah, so the reason they gave her, Neil, was that she was told she couldn't get planning because she's not a local. Now, this lady has been living and working in that area for 18 years. So, I mean,
to be local, do you have to be born there, Helen, is it?
Well, no, actually, one of the criteria, and I have it here in front of me, Neil, would be to be considered local. It would be, and I'll just read it out, a few persons who have spent a substantial period of their lives, i.e. over 7 years, living in the local rural area in which they propose to build the first home for their permanent occupation.
She's there 18 years.
She's there 18 years, so she meets the criteria. You know, so it doesn't really make sense.
And of course, the criteria was not to put a mobile home. She wanted to build a home on the land.
She wanted to build a home, Neil. She'd done everything correct. She'd done everything she was asked to do, and she was refused every time. And we're in an off situation now where they have sent her an enforcement notice, and they want to go to court on the 22nd of May, and that is to demolish what she's done and put everything back to the way she had it. Now, that really doesn't make sense because, you know, here, you know, she has nowhere to go. As you know, you can't get a house to rent for lover money. So she will effectively become homeless herself and her pets. So what is she to do? You know, and she will become a burden on the state then as well. Here she is. She bought her own land. She wants to build her own house, but yet they won't allow her. And then on the other hand, then I think it's a bit unfair because, you know, they can put up, it seems to me that there's kind of like a two-tier system going on. You know, there's one planning law for this woman and no planning law for people that come into the country overnight,
right, yeah,
and modular homes are put up overnight. I think that's a bit unfair.
And it has made people very angry at that unfairness. However, if I were to push back there to you, you know, the county councils have a role to play. The planning authorities have a role to play. Otherwise, there would be chaos. People would be throwing up things all over the place and there'd be no law. It'd be like, the whole place would be chaotic. Yeah. Would you accept that there have to be rules that are to be followed?
Oh, absolutely. Of course, there has to be rules, Neil, but she's obeying by all the rules, and yet there are still roadblocks being put in her way. You know, she's facing the possibility of becoming homeless herself and her pets. Her parents are in her 80s. They're living nearby. They have mobility issues. You know, they are depending on her. Like I said, she had a cancer scare last November.
Mm-hmm.
She had reconstructive surgery. She's been monitored and, you know, she's been told to kind of remain in a stress-free zone if possible. So you can imagine all this on top of everything else is not adding. And especially we're in a housing crisis as well, Neil. You know, and wouldn't it make a bit of sense to give this woman her planning and let her build her house?
Totally. Absolutely. Then she's not on a homeless list and she's nor is she on a housing list. I understand, 100%.
Exactly.
Are we talking about in and around Ballady Hob on this one, is it?
Yes. About maybe nearly 2.5 kilometres out of Ballady Hob town. You know, and she has really done lovely, as you can see from the photos there. It's fantastic. Like, you know, she's enhancing the whole area. She's come in here. She's bought her property. She's paying her taxes. She's doing.
She's not squatting. It's her own land. Absolutely. So what
her
do you?
Own land.
So yeah. Is there much? I mean, there's huge support for Sean Meehan above in Tipperary. Is there much support down Ballady Hobway for Sarah?
Yes, there would be. I suppose she's only come out. She's only reached out to the people the last couple of days. She's reached out to me and things have really blown up just within 24 hours, really. So she's getting a lot of support. You know, people are really kind of rallying behind us and are offering help. And, like, we will do exactly like what Sean Meehan has done in Newen and Tipperary, Neil, because this woman is left with no choice. She doesn't want to become homeless. So we will, you know, we'll have protests if we have to. We'll support her. You know, we'll highlight awareness of all of this because I think it's just so wrong, you know, that she's been treated like this.
Yeah.
She's trying to do her best.
Yeah.
This is what's happening to her.
Sean put up a log cabin. No disrespect now, but I imagine people would say there would be a difference between a log cabin and a mobile home. Would you accept that?
This is actually, I'm not sure if you see the pictures, but it's very much like a log cabin. It's very similar and lovely decking outside around it and her lovely landscaped area there as well. It's fantastic. It would actually nearly put a lot of us to shame, Neil, to drive in her lovely driveway.
Oh, no, she has fierce respect for where she lives. She
it's
really does.
Unbelievable.
She's very proud.
It really is.
Yeah,
she's very happy there. Like she has said to me, it's her home, Neil. She's near her parents. You know, her pets are there. She just wants to get on with her life. She just wants to, you know, build a house, create employment by building a house, giving local contractors the job. And, you know,
a bit of common sense. Let the woman build. A bit of common sense. So,
exactly.
So Sean now in June, his was deferred last week back to June to give him an opportunity to apply for retention of his log cabin. That's a chink of light for Sean. I'd be slightly more optimistic about his case now than, say, a month ago. It's going to be down to a judge on the 22nd of May to make a call on what happens next. It can depend on the judge you get, and the judge's hands might be tied by law.
And this lady has already applied for retention, and again, to no good, Neil. You know, she's tried everything. She's done everything she's supposed to do. She's obeyed the law in every way. She's not breaking the law at all. And all she wants to do is build a house and live on her land. You know, this is what she bought the land for, to live there. And I just really think, you know, I'm calling on the council to please use a bit of common sense here, because, you know, the lady just wants to build her house and live there. And, you know, she doesn't want to be a burden on the state by having
common sense. Yeah, a bit of cop on is sadly lacking often, isn't it? Yeah,
It's that's the problem, and that's what has found to me to run in the local elections, Neil, because, you know, unfortunately, common sense is not so common anymore when it comes to a lot of, you know, policies and stuff like that. I feel there's an awful lot of bureaucrats, you know, going on here.
Will people stand with her in court in May?
They will. I'll certainly be there to support her 100%, and I'm sure once this gets out even more now, I would imagine the whole area, the local community
we'll certainly share it, and I know other media as well. Would you mind staying in touch and feel free to come back to me if there are any updates or developments?
I will, of course, Neil, absolutely.
Okay, and pass on our best as well to Sarah Williams, will you?
I will, of course. Thank you very much, Neil.
Okay, Helen, take care for now. Helen O'Sullivan, independent candidate down Bantry Way. Your thoughts on that, again? Is it a case that we have to follow the rules and the laws and the legislation and the planning and all of the different things, or is it a case of, please, please, can we engage in a bit more common sense, help people out, particularly if they have their own land and want to build their own house? The reason now that she's got the mobile home, and I suppose to some extent it's even nicer than, say, a stereotypical mobile home, is because she wanted to build her own home on her own land. 18 years in the community, but twice she was refused in the middle of a housing crisis. There's rules for some and other rules for others, I suppose. Back after the break.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
You better believe it. I've a feeling I'll be revisiting some topics again on Monday, particularly with regards to the dog payment, $1 million a month for 1,800 cats and dogs. Great show. Actually, before I read the text, you might remember Charlie on the air. He broke it down per dog or per cat at €555 per pet per week, €6,667 per year. What would you be spending it on? It comes in at about €70 per day. It's an awful lot of dosh. Anyway, Coleman in White's Cross says, great show. Put the dog payment of €70 a day into perspective with the farm labourer wage in Europe, in Ukraine, which is approximately €100 a week. In a country where you can buy their furnished homes for approximately €50,000. Put that into perspective, I suppose. Put that in our pipes and smoke it, is the point, isn't it? So more on that between now and midday. Playing us out live this morning, Fanny Lumsden's back in town with the Prawn Stars. And you might recall she was in studio with us some months ago and she was rocking the joint. She's playing DeBarra's in Clonakilty tonight and Dolan's in Limerick tomorrow. And she packs a serious punch musically. And she also toured Ireland, toured the UK, played Glastonbury last summer and everything. So she'll play us out live. Do you recall a letter that I read on an air about a week or so ago? My apologies to the family involved for not coming back to it until this point. But the letter writer, for it was a letter, says, I hope you don't mind this letter. I don't do social media and I'm not really up to date on email. It's after taking me almost 5 months to write this letter to you in the first place. My son is an alcoholic and he really wants help. I listened to the man you had on recently about, say, the gambling addictions and decided to write to you. We are living in an area outside of Cork in a very small village, so we hope we can get help from the Cork area. My son is a functioning alcoholic. He has a good job and he's doing well other than the alcohol. He's introverted, not very social. We did get him a place in rehab, but he really didn't find it good. I won't name the rehab as I'm not here to deprecate it, but it was extremely unpleasant. It was filthy, foul, squalid. It cost over €7,000 a month. We're not looking for anything fancy, but your basic cleanliness would be good. This place, you wouldn't house rodents in it. Another thing was that there were people in there for various reasons, other reasons, like to look good for the judge with regards to an impending court case and sentencing. So it was deceptive. The family visits, you'd find people were dropping in various substances. Having said that, my son is now 50 days clean and we travel for AA. We're just wondering, is there any private-only rehab in the Cork area that he could go to? He is struggling so bad and isn't getting much from the AA meetings. Also, is there anywhere where a husband or myself could get some help, some education for ourselves? We've tried counselling. We're hoping to meet like-minded people in the same situation. Thank you for taking the time for reading this. Don't give out. or personal details. So, and I will never do that. So I read about that and read it on the air and thought, you know, I gave as much advice as I could give with regards to, you know, Al-Anon and AA and the different counselling services that are available a couple of weeks ago. And I spoke about the different types of rehab. Some of it is private, some of it is part public and part private, and as far as I could go in that regard. But I said that we should ask somebody who has been through the mill with regards to alcoholism. Pat Phelan, of course, the co-founder of Sisu Clinic and lots of other very successful international companies. He's sober 24 years this January. Takes it a day at a time, as he always says. But I sent him a copy of the letter and redacted the details of the family and asked him to have a read of it, which he has done. Pat, good morning.
Morning, Neil. How are you?
I'm good, my brother. She said that rehab didn't really suit him. He didn't find it any good. Can that happen?
It can, I suppose, but I kind of feel it's more of a state of mind than anything, you know. I mean, I haven't been to rehab, but I go to AA and I go all the time. And that works for me, you know. I mean, you know, I think you had Brenda on a few weeks ago, we all listened to the blog, you know. You know, powerful stuff. But, you know, some people it changes their lives and some people it doesn't. But I think it's the state of mind you're in, you know.
And do you think to some extent that we should be kind of looking at this letter through that prism, like that AA doesn't work, that rehab didn't work, that there are kind of barriers being put up?
Well, I think, you know, firstly, anyway, you know, if he's 50 days sober, congratulations on that, or maybe a few days more now, please God.
Totally, yeah.
But I think, you know, something works in the end, you know. I mean, I spent, you know, we used to salute each other on Bridge Street when
I was a
chef in Taste of Thailand, and I'd be up and down to Patrick's Hill every day, and, you know, it took me almost 3 years to stop, you know. And that was from the first time going into Patrick's Hill, you know.
So you would have continued to go to the AA meetings while you struggled to stop?
Yeah. I'd get a month, I'd get a week, I'd get 2 months, and I'd go back drinking, you know. And I almost tried to, I suppose, think my way sober, you know. Everything was, you know, I remember I'd go down and buy books and I'd go down to Waterstones and I think I'd have a magical answer, you know, the power of positive thinking and the Lotus Eater, and, you know, I was different. I wasn't like these guys at all, or women, and, you know, I was different and I had this experience and that bad experience and this wasn't for me. And, you know, eventually I was beaten down enough to decide this was for me.
Yeah, did that make you like her son a functioning alcoholic? What is a functioning alcoholic?
I suppose it's someone that has their life somewhat under control, or outwardly might look as if they have their life under control, with probably periodic episodes of it being out of control.
As in holding down a good job, managing to put food on the table, happiness in the home kind of thing.
But like you can imagine the effort that goes into that maintenance, both mentally, financially, family-wise, you know, just the function alone, you know. And I remember that period well, and, you know, that period of trying to function was probably harder than the period of stopping.
Because you had so many kind of balls in the air, is it?
So many balls in the air, you know. I remember, like, kind of towards the end, I'd made some friends in AA. I'd gone back drinking. I was a chef below in Taste of Thailand in Bridge Street. It's long gone now.
Yeah.
And, you know, even the waitresses knew, you know, and the waitresses would come down and they'd say, "Oh, your friends from up the hill have come in for a meal," and I'd go, "Jesus, what are this gang doing in here now, following me around the place?"
Yeah.
And I'd slip off out the back door and over to the off license at the bottom of Patrick's Hill and get two naggins and go down and get the bus.
When did the penny drop then? Was it just trial and error, constantly, you know, falling, picking yourself up, and eventually one particular day, or what?
I think it was just like for me, it was New Year's Eve in 2000, the big bang. and I got a big bang. And I think like at the end, it's kind of that kind of complete and utter demoralization, dehumanization, that, you know, in other words, you're, I won't say the word, but, you know, you're
starts with an F, yeah. So does he,
yeah.
Does this man, this son, have to fall further? I don't mean to come across as cruel now or unkind, but has he not hit the rock bottom that he needs to hit yet?
I don't know, because, like, you know, what's the ultimate rock bottom is debt, I suppose. So, you know, like, I kind of went, when I got better, I suppose the first 2 years weren't really better, but when I start, you know, throwing the towel and started looking at myself more than looking at others and looking at things and peoples and places, that was kind of when I started to do well, you know, or started to feel better in myself anyway, you know. And like, I've been, you know, I did 3 years running meetings in lockup wards. I've been to the prisons, I've been to the treatment centres doing meetings, you know. And, you know, the only ending here is death. So, you know,
so you,
I kind of give up, to be honest. I kind of, and I hate saying it, and it isn't what I kind of mean, but, you know, I'd forget about this place was bad and that place was bad and this meeting doesn't suit me, and kind of be thankful and try to drive on, you know.
When you quit, you were 34, you were very young. I think as well, you probably started to see, in spite of the haze of alcohol, that you had huge potential, which you ultimately then went on to achieve. You would never have achieved that if you weren't sober, right?
Not a chance. I mean,
why not? Why not?
Like, everything was about alcohol, you know. Nothing was about future. It was all about, you know, how much did I make in tips today? How much drink will that get me? You know, it was all about that. That kind of almost 24-hour party, people, where everything was about today and nothing was about thinking. And the thinking was mostly about, how do I start tomorrow, or how do I get over the wreckage I've done today? So it was never kind of about, you know, there's a potential future here, you know.
So did that make you a kind of a selfish person in that regard then?
Desperately, you know. I mean, like, you know, I often heard people say, you know, a dog looks after their own, like, and, you know, I think most addicts, you know, aren't to blame, but I think it's a position where your thoughts of others are very minimal, you know.
Fair play to you, yeah, for your honesty, because looking at the letter which you have, and one sentence jumped off, because you would say that in your past, or when you were young, that you were a very shy person, right? Very introverted, and that would,
yes,
have led
absolutely.
To
and still am.
Okay,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, you could have fooled me, but
I suppose what I tell people is I'm an extroverted introvert, you know.
So you have to work on that as well.
But I have to work on it desperately. If I'm giving a talk or giving a show or one of these tech shows or something like that, like, the headphones have to go on. I have to try to psych myself up, you know. And I suppose I've become even more awkward as I've gotten older.
But this lad is introverted as well. His mam says he's introverted, not very social. So there's a lot of similarities to you, isn't there?
Absolutely. And I mean, like, all I know is, whether it's NA or AA, I would advise the family Al-Anon right away, as you've done correctly, you know, to try understand. But like, all I know is, for me, and I'll only talk about myself, is, you know, AA works. I was walking down Patrick Street the day before yesterday and bumped into a friend of mine. I haven't seen him for 4 years. He's home from overseas. You know, and I mightn't be able to remember myself coming into AA so much, but I remember him. And the change is just dramatic. He was off to meet his daughter for a cup of tea. And, you know, that guy, and I presume I'm that guy, was as bad as you've ever seen, you know?
So you would, because you travel an awful lot, you would check in at AA meetings in the four corners of the globe, would you?
Yeah, I I'm in New York quite a bit. I have a regular group in New York. People I go to, places I like, you know, and like, some meetings don't suit me. They're not for me.
What do you mean by that? Because that's, she's saying that the meetings don't suit. They're not for her. Why would you say, in what way aren't for
it? Might just be a group that I don't like. But you know what? Like, I was talking to Claire yesterday when she rang me. There was also pubs that didn't suit me.
Yeah.
There's also restaurants that don't suit me. There's also clothes shops that don't suit me. But you've that choice. There's meetings everywhere. They're online. They're on Zoom. You know, I think, like, without that support structure, and I mean external support structure, you're probably in trouble, you know.
Can you do it without Alcoholics Anonymous? Can you do it yourself solo?
I can only, I suppose I can only speak about myself.
I know that.
And what I did, and, you know, it worked for me and continues to work for me. You know, it transformed my life. Like, I mean, I had to do the work, but without wandering into Patrick's Hill all those years ago, a small dark room down the steps, you know, where empty biscuit tins were ashtrays. And, you know, I was told to give the place a clean up and wash a few cups when I thought it was kind of important. Without all that, like, this story wouldn't have been told, you know.
But you have to, anyway. I won't keep you much longer, but do you have to, some days, get to a meeting because the temptation becomes so great? I hope that she's listening to this, because perhaps they're experiencing this in the family as well, that he's trying, and, you know, he's periods of time when he's sober, but something happens. Do you have to protect yourself against that?
At the start, no, a lot more than now. You know, I'm kind of, I know the indicators now when I'm slightly off. But, you know, do I run to meetings every day? I don't, because he gave me the power to live and rejoin, you know.
Yeah.
So I know when I need to go. And, you know, I now have loads of friends who would check in on me. How you doing? What's the story? Anything bothering you? You know, and then, like, people are, you know, there's kind of steps, and I've made my apologies and I've made my amends and I've done my bit and I tried to change myself. But, like, you know, like, the most important thing at that chap stage, like, is just go to a meeting, you know. And if you go in somewhere and you don't like it, go to another one.
Yeah.
Tomorrow night, you know. But the day, and, like, I remember, like, the very start, you know, I used to try to stay sober for an hour. And, you know, hours became days, became months, became weeks, whatever. And I kind of got the break then, you know. But, like, just try to get through to that. And I'm ferociously heavy on, you know, if I go to bed at night without taking a drink, I'm home and dry.
Yes, as you lay your head on the pillow. Well said. That's today looked after, isn't it? That's today done.
Today looks after, and tomorrow's problems are tomorrow.
Matt, thank you so much for taking the call, my man. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much, Neil. As always. I hope he's all right.
Thank you for saying that. They'll be very, very grateful for your contribution. Thanks so much. Wonderful guy. The great Pat Phelan. Your thoughts on that are welcome, and I'll pick up on your texts and calls on Monday. Text 0868104106. Very, very happy to say, honoured to say, Fanny Lumsden and the Prawn Stars back in studio. We'll get a couple of tunes out of them. The first one after the break.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Always been a believer, everything will be okay, and good things they come to those who are willing to wait, and all that shit about good luck and that. What you sow. capture the breeze. It's impossible, impossible to capture the breeze.
Ridiculous. I can just imagine DeBarra's tonight. You'd be rocking the joint.
Gonna go off.
Oh my God. I can just picture it in my mind's eye.
Full band too.
Full band.
And sold out. Why wouldn't that surprise me? Everywhere you go, you sell out. So welcome back, Fanny. Welcome back, all of the gang. You've got, who's the rest of the gang? I got to hear somewhere with me. Yeah, we got Dan, Tom, Patty, and yourself. It's almost like as if you're joined at the hip.
It's true. Yeah, it's true. I don't go anywhere without them. They're my security detail.
It could be detrimental to touring sometimes.
Yes, it can.
I mean, for album sales.
I mean, yeah. It's detrimental to
I need that album. I must get a copy of that. But what, like, is it the Irish climate that leads you to wearing a big woolly hat in a warm studio with a big red coat on you? Or is it the image?
No, it's definitely the climate. I don't care for the image as much. Look, it's raining out there.
You're
just
struggling.
Getting all cozy. I got up very early in the morning and I just actually wearing my pyjamas under here so I can't get unchanged.
To go around Ireland perpetually cold. Cold in
just
Belfast.
Just hiding my pyjamas.
Cold in Belfast, cold in Cork, cold in Limerick.
But happy to be here, you know?
Happy cold to and be happy. Here. Oh my God, it's great to see you. I don't know, it's just such a vibe.
It is.
The energy of the music. Good for you.
Thanks.
If I behave, could I squeeze another song out in a couple of seconds?
Oh, I reckon. Yeah, maybe.
Okay, just hang in there and stay warm in the meantime. Let me just do a little
bit. I'm prepped.
The Red Patrollers, live on the streets of Cork.
And the Red Patrollers are out on tour again today. Colm O'Sullivan and the gang have taken themselves down to Hurley Heath Centre. I believe there's a new one, I'm told, on the North Main Street. He joins me by WhatsApp. Colm, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are you doing?
What's the plan, my man? Big crowd?
We're here. The crowd is building. There's lots of people around in North Main Street at the moment. Great atmosphere. It's the fourth Hurley Heath Centre in town now, Neil. They obviously have previously the one on Patrick Street, the one on Grand Parade and Oliver Plunkett Street that are there for many years. And today it is the grand opening of the brand new one here on North Main Street. It's in the new building with the new student accommodation on North Main Street, down the end of North Main Street, kind of by where the old shopping centre was. So it's a beautiful store. There's loads going on here. And we're doing the grand opening in about 10 minutes.
Right.
And a man who's beside me here is doing the grand opening. A friend of yours, George Patterson of the Roaring Forties. He's like the king of North Main Street and Grattan Street
local,
down here.
Local to the parish, which is lovely. Fair play.
Exactly. He's cutting the ribbon.
I'd be slow to give George Patterson anything sharp. For fear that he's sticking himself. But anyway.
I'll keep an eye on him.
All right. Well, have a good one. It's open to the public. They can go along, be part of the party.
It is. And there's a great party here and they're giving out loads of free food and stuff. And I've got a load of €50 vouchers to give away. So if someone fancies a €50 voucher for Centra, pop down here and I might sort them out as well.
You're the man. Have a good one. Well done, Colm. The Red Patrollers at the opening of the new flagship store on the North Main Street, Hurley Heath Centra. Good luck to all. More live music after the break. Fanny Lumsden and the Prawn Stars. Defrost her first.
Call Neil now. 0818-104-106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
A little rough around the edges for a living job smooth.
'Cause when I die, we're gonna shoot my ashes into the sky. Cheers as you watch them fly across the valley and through that golden light. So please don't cry, because I, oh I, how lived a good life. And if you rock up to the church on the very last day and expect to walk straight through the pearly gates, maybe it's all just a little too late. You better stick to your guns, gotta choose your own fate.
DeBarris is going to be rocking tonight, lads. Well done. Oh, my God.
Thank
great
you
to
so
see
much.
You. Thanks for coming in, Fanny Lumsden and the Prawn Stars. Talking about food items, we were chatting during the ad break. You guys are aficionados of a good steak and Guinness pie.
Oh,
yeah, we love it.
Okay,
love
well,
some pastry.
A warning now to the pie guys down in the English market. I'm sending this hungry gang down. Look after them. 4 pies, please.
Yes, straight up. Yeah. Sounds perfect.
Share the pictures on your Insta.
Oh, we will, we will.
And have a good one.
Thank you so
great
much.
Great to see you. Oh, man, I'm buzzing. That's fantastic. Last bit of business this morning involves our last shout-outs for Free Food Friday. And a quick good morning to everybody, the nursing staff at the Emergency Department at the CUH, Sentry Pharmacy on Washington Street, Ingetech Engineering Supplies, Laura National School are listening, Shandon Flowers, the Mercy Hospital Pharmacy are on board, Little Hands Crèche in Farran Ferris, Aramex in Carrick Tool, Crowbar and Rexall in Spring Hill, Stonemasons.ie building, the most ginormous gate has gone on for months, the Pathology Department at the South Infirmary, Northside Tires, Rockwell Engineering, and everybody at Anderco Safety Little Island. But the winners this week for Free Food Friday, where 15 of you will be fed with the best of food from Camille Thai. And the food will be delivered piping hot by Red Patrollers this lunchtime, is everybody at Galvin Dorgan Solicitors on the South Mall. They said to us this morning, words along the effect that send us the food and we'll make all of this go away. Bernard, we love it.
How you doing, Neil?
Can you make it go away?
Well, we try. We try. We try to kind of smooth the waters.
Can you talk to the judge, please?
We'll do our best.
Anyway, listen, we've got you sorted on this damp and dreary old day. Food for 15 of you. So enjoy it, my friends, and thanks for listening.
brilliant. Thanks a million. We're delighted.
I think there's about 30 of you, so you'll have to do some serious sharing. Any chance of a big weekend shout out before we go? Give us a big cheer.
No problem at all. Yay!
That's the best effort that 30 cheering solicitors can make. Oh, my God almighty. Anyway, enjoy lunch. Have a good one, Bernard. Take care. Galvin Solicitors on the South Mall. That's it, guys. Have a good weekend. I'll see you Monday.
When Cork talks,
Cork people blow my mind.
They talk to Neil Prendeville
on Red FM.